You're listening to the Wave Express podcast, delivering everything you need to know to stay safe and profitable out on the road.
Welcome to the Wave Express podcast. This is Mike Miles, GM at Wave, and I have with me today Rick Boyer, a veteran driver and all-around good guy. Rick, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Mike. Enjoy being here.
Let's start out by just getting a little bit of background on your driving history, your work history, what brought you to RV transport.
Okay. Well, I am. I retired military, and I started driving semi. And my wife and I bought a small business, and I thought in order to help her more because I wasn't working hourly, I could do something like what I'm doing here is where I can transport units, and if I want to work for 3 weeks and take a week off, I can. So kind of a semi-retirement type job, you might want to say. Mm-hmm. So and I had a background as far as driving truck and pulling units. I had that from the military and carried over to truck driving, and it carried over to RV.
Sure. What if I might ask, what branch did you serve?
Army.
Okay.
Yeah, retired with 23 years.
Awesome. Well, thank you for your service. We all appreciate that. And just out of curiosity, how did the Army set you up for being a business owner, driving your own truck,
well,
and doing your own thing?
The biggest thing with the military, I think, and is the fact that you have to take orders. And for two, with me as being an NCO, a non-commissioned officer, I had troops under me, so you had to deal with different people's attitudes, and everybody has their different personality, and that carry. And then, of course, with the trucking and military vehicle, that all helped out in the civilian side. And then, of course, when you get in the civilian side, you have basically the same thing. You have people above you, people under you. And as far as going into the RV and in the local business, I guess you would say it has a lot to do with customers. You know, you're around other people, so you know how to take personnel and segregate them on how to respect them at the same time getting the job accomplished.
Sure. And you're from South Dakota, right?
Correct.
Were you born and raised there?
Yes, I was. I was born and raised there. I went to school in a couple of different schools there, and I was born in Gregory, South Dakota, and moved in Cologne, in that general vicinity, you know, and the drive-in theater is actually is our small business, and it's in Gregory, South Dakota, and my wife knew the owner of the theater because he used to date my wife's mom when we were dating, and she told him that if he ever decided to retire, and of course, since then they haven't been, he and my mother-in-law haven't been together, of course, mm-hmm. but 6 years ago he said he was ready to retire, and he sold us the property, so we've had it for 6 years now.
Wow.
So we really enjoy it, and that goes back to what I said earlier about being able to drive for 3 weeks and take a week off and help maintain the drive-in theater because we both have full-time jobs. We live 80 miles away from the drive-in theater, so that's a little bit of a – but my wife works halfway in between there, so it's not quite a commute during the summertime.
Sure.
So we, you know, we open in May and go until October or September, so it's challenging, you know.
What's the name of the theater?
The Hilltop Drive-In.
The Hilltop Drive-In.
In Gregory, okay. South Dakota, yep.
Okay, so if you're ever in Hilltop, South Dakota.
No, Gregory.
Or Gregory, be sure and stop in at the Hilltop Drive-In, owned by a fellow driver.
And just a note, I said it before that Wave drivers are free admittance.
Oh.
They got free admittance. They show the DMA app. And of course, they're going to buy their own food, of course, because we cook prepared food. We both had the food safe course, so we got really good food there. But Wave drivers are free admittance.
Wow, excellent. Well, that's very kind of you.
Not just the Wave drivers, Wave employees. So that goes for you too.
If you're taking
a vacation and you happen to be going to South Dakota to see Mount Rushmore and we're off the beaten path a little bit and you wanted to check it out on your way back or whatever, just let us know.
I would love to do that. That would be fun. That would be fun.
Well, maybe everybody but you. Oh, just kidding. I have a nickname that you pegged me with, man. That's back.
Yeah, you know what? And I didn't even realize you didn't like the nickname. Little background between Rick and I was his dispatcher.
Previous company.
Man, yeah, it was back in 2019, early 2019. Oh. And then we both ended up transferring over to Wave from the same company, and that we've always gotten along. Rick, you've always, when we were dispatched, when I was dispatching you, you were always Johnny on the spot, and the nickname came from always having to put three loads on you because two loads just wouldn't be enough. And so Ricky Three Loads. Now, I didn't realize you didn't like the name Ricky.
No.
Not for years. No, yeah. So it's Rick Three Loads now.
Yeah, yeah. We still know who we're talking about when we say Ricky, but I don't like Ricky. But there again, it's all fun.
Sure.
I mean,
sure.
And then, of course, like I said, you pegged me with the nickname, and it kind of stuck because people around here say, oh, Ricky, I know who that is. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, because sometimes, you know, you deal with a lot of people, and putting a face with a name, especially when you start off, it's, you know, you have a little nickname and get a little laugh out of it, and you tend to remember it a little bit. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but that's it.
Well, in this case, it's very good because you're an outstanding driver, and we appreciate all that you do for us and the way you do it. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to have you on the podcast is because you've really shown that, one, you know how to deal with customers. You know how to deal with people. You know how to work with your dispatcher. And you know how to drive well. You've got 250,000+ safety miles. So we appreciate the way you drive, and we want you to be able to tell other drivers what some of the keys to your success are.
Yeah, see, you know, I like to try to pass my knowledge on to either younger generation or new drivers for the fact that, you know, I believe that we need to enjoy our life, and going through life with stress, it doesn't help anyone. Road rage, things like that. And I'm not saying I don't get road rage. I just don't act on it.
Okay.
You know, and we do get frustrated. People are out there and have no respect. And if I can keep it calm, and sometimes when you smile at them, they get madder. You know, so you know, I like to pass it on to other drivers. And in this industry, one of the reasons, if you don't mind me saying, one of the reasons why I did this is because when I drove semi, you have E-log. And if most people don't know what E-log is, if the vehicle moves over 5 miles an hour, you're actually logging.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you have yard move and stuff like that, but that's a different scenario.
You're referring to the ELD.
The ELD.
Okay.
Yep. And I wanted to get out of that. You know, I've done it for many years. I had 1 million safety miles with my semi. And that's, you know, no violations, no speeding, nothing. So that's a good accomplishment, driving a truck. And bringing that over to the RV industry, it just helped out. Very helpful.
Sure.
You know, with my background. And I think that trying to get some of the, and if some people are thinking about doing this, like I said, I like the way the freedom is. You pick a load, you take a load. Generally speaking, you have a deadline, but the deadline is flexible, especially because of the weather. And one of our biggest challenges is the wind, but that might be another topic that you want to touch on. So planning your route ahead. You know, you got some people that are retired. They might not want to drive 700 miles in a day. They might want to only drive 500, sure. Whatever. It's all what a person wants. But you can do that because the industry that we're in is flexible enough to where you can be flexible with it.
Sure. Let's talk about the pre-trip planning that you do once you're dispatched.
Okay, and just for an example, a good example, yesterday I got a dispatch, I didn't know where I wanted to go yet because I was over at Dan's getting some work done on my truck, and my dispatcher, Kathy, gave me a dispatch, and I didn't get a chance to pre-check it to find out what the wind was like. And one of my things is windy.com is the one that I prefer. There are other ones out there. And I like to know what direction the wind's going, how strong it is, things like that. And you might choose a different route. For example, my dispatch is going to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Well, there's three different ways you could go. You know, one of them is you go all the way to 29 through Iowa, and another one is you go up by Waterloo and go across 20 over to Sioux City, and then another one you go up north through Wisconsin and Minnesota and go across that way. So depending on where the wind is at and the direction and the severity of the wind might dictate your route of travel.
Okay.
You know.
And yeah, so you've had success with windy.com.
Yeah, I have. I met a driver from, I think he was a Horizon driver, and this had been about a year ago, and there's one called Wind Compass, and it actually tells you the wind and wind gust at the time, but I have a lot of pop-ups because I didn't pay, it was a free one, and I didn't pay to upgrade it, but it shows you the wind direction and the wind speed and the gusts at the time that you're actually there.
Okay.
So it's a good tool to have. If anybody in RV industry has gone west, they know that Wyoming is a crapshoot when it comes to what the wind is doing.
Right.
And they're real good about posting the thing above saying wind gusts over 40 plus or whatever. And in our industry, I don't know, just to touch base, that our policy is that if the winds are over 25 and the wind gusts are over 40, we're parked. I personally, when the wind gusts get above 35, I'm very, very particular about where I'm going. And what I do is if it looks like the wind's going to get worse, I might risk it and go through that little section of that 35 mile an hour gust at a lot slower speed so I can make my destination. If it's not going to drop down, it's going to get higher. Or if it doesn't look like it, then I'm going to stay at a safe place. You know, so
safety is always first, and especially with weather and especially with wind. So that's smart to kind of analyze what the wind's doing and not taking any chances. Yeah, that 25 mile an hour sustained wind rule, that's just the max. A lot of guys, they'll shut down at 15 or 20. If it's not letting up or you're getting heavy gusts, and that's just smart business right there. You're protecting yourself, protecting others, and protecting the load.
Yeah. Well, and another one is that the fuel consumption. You know, we're out here to make a little bit of money, and if you're not making money, at least saving some money. Mm-hmm. And that's where the fleet card's nice to have, where you can get to stations and I noticed with my truck, you know, if the sustained wind is 20 mile an hour, I can look down at my instant economy on my truck and I can see that I'm pulling a wind. So
sure.
I either back down and go a little bit slower and then evaluate, you know, if it's, you know, what's the deadline to drop that unit off? Is it worth pushing? Maybe I only got 30 miles to go, so I'm going to push through it and the wind's going to switch or drop off, and then no problem. Just slow down. And I've noticed with this gust, you know, they're hitting you pretty hard. It's like, well, you know what? Slow down a little bit and adjust accordingly. And not everybody's going to get it right away. It's something that you have to acquire. Mm-hmm.
Hitting those max sustained winds and gusts, getting off the road is just an essential.
Yep, it is. I had... just a short story here. When I was going through Montana, and it's a couple of years ago, over by Livingston, and they had the sign above the highway saying that the winds weren't bad, but they were, you know, like you said, they were gusty, and they don't tell you, because you're not from that area, so you don't know what Highway 333 is. You know, you don't know that. You're not from there. And if they put exits or mile markers, it would be great, because you'd know. You'd pay attention to that stuff.
Sure.
Well, anyway, I went through Livingston and I got hit by a freak gust and it put the fifth wheel up on two wheels. So I had a brown short moment. You know, I couldn't see it go up, but I could feel it when it came back down because I have a dually and I couldn't see the wheels come off the ground. And there was a pickup passing me, and I think I was going 45, 50, because the wind was a little bit tuggy. Mm-hmm. And a pickup beside me almost went into media because he must have thought I was going to flip. But I was going slow enough, I believe, that my speed helped. And when I got off at that next exit, I had like a mile and a half to go. I went back. I had to go back toward town a little ways, and there's a little Scenics there. And another RV pulled up about 20 minutes later and said they shut the interstate down right after I went through there.
Wow.
So and they said it was a 52-mile-an-hour gust that hit me. You know, and that's what that come right through there. And ever since then, I'm a little more paranoid about the wind. But there again, it's one of them things where paying attention to your surroundings, not having my radio blaring so I can hear what's going on and things like that. Because you can usually hear your suspension on either the RV or the pickup. You can hear it creak a little bit, or maybe the fifth wheel, just little things like that that you pick up. But like I said, I've been doing it for a little while, so it pays attention. If the roads are adverse conditions, I shut my radio off. I like to listen to audiobooks. I mute it, and I like to listen to the surroundings. I like to hear what's going on around me. If my tires are hitting the rumble strips, or if somebody else is hitting the rumble strips, you know, those are all indicators that there's something going on. So you want to be alert.
Sure. And in preparing for this for us meeting, I did a little research. Your load selection is prime. I mean, you've done 14 different states, and all but two of those are out west. We're talking South Dakota, Wyoming, Washington, California, Idaho, Utah. So you're dealing with not only wind, but in the wintertime, you're dealing with a lot of different adverse weather, black ice, whiteout conditions at times, I'm sure. How do you deal with those, and what is your strategy? Are there a couple keys that you look for in choosing your route and knowing when to shut down?
Well, as far as choosing the route goes, interstate travel is almost always better for a couple of reasons. For one, a lot of these side roads, you don't have a shoulder. So, and they're not maintained as frequently as the interstate, you know. And don't get me wrong, interstates, Wyoming, when they have a pileup, they have a pileup, and you're parked for a while. But I think the background with me living in South Dakota, driving on icy roads, snowy roads, that helped a lot. You know, I grew up in this stuff. But as far as going across Wyoming, it's one of them things where you have to be prepared. I've actually gone across when the roads were actually pretty decent, and my tires broke loose going across the bridge. As we all know, bridges like to ice a little bit more, and not using cruise control. I can't stress that enough.
You can't use cruise control in weather like that.
And even if the weather is questionable, because I look at, and for new drivers and maybe even old drivers, if you have moisture in the air and your temperature is down around the freezing mark, look at the backside of your outside mirrors. They ice up first. Just like with the semi, they always ice up first. Well, if they're icing up, there's a good chance that you're going to have ice on the roadway. And there again, I broke loose, and just lift on the throttle. You don't touch the brake. You just lift on the throttle, let the vehicle roll through it. And then when you get to the other side, regather yourself and, you know, accelerate gradually, especially if you're getting into a slide, because I've had that where you're sliding down the road and your trailer is technically pushing your truck sideways. So if you slow down, it's going to push it further. So you've got to accelerate a little bit just to get it back straight again.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big, I can't explain it except for experience. You know, you can't, and that goes back to what I was saying about shutting your radio off. You know, I'm watching my tack. I didn't hear my truck. I watched my tack jumped. I didn't know I was breaking loose until my tack jumped. I'm like, oh, my tack moved real quick. I broke loose. Sometimes sure. You don't notice it. So you watch your tachometer, you feel your vehicle. If you're distracted with, and you don't have to be talking on your phone, you're listening to a podcast, you're listening to audiobook, whatever. You are not 100% with the road. I don't care what they say. In my situation, 50-50 maybe. Well, that other 50% that you're not using to drive could put you in a ditch or worse. So I can't stress enough about unfamiliar roads, unpredicted weather patterns, road conditions. you know, concentrate on what you're doing, not on what you're listening to. You know, I like to hear the truck. I like to hear the engine. I like to hear the tires. If, you know, if it's nice, smooth sailing, no problem. I do it. I do it all the time. I come into traffic, come into a town, I mute it. I like to hear that car that's trying to stop the stoplight that they're trying to run. I want to hear them tires screeching. I don't want them to hit me first and then feel it.
Situational awareness.
You're
aware of your surroundings.
You got to be paying attention. You know, sure. So I like to hear, and some people, they like to drive with their stereo blasting all the time. When you get in that, and I'm not saying that's bad, but you got to pay attention to where you're at. You're coming into a town. You got more people trying to get somewhere, lights, whatever. If you're cruising down the interstate, yeah, I listen to the radio. I listen to my audiobooks.
Sure.
You know, and you know, go back to the Smith system and paying attention to what's going on.
Yep.
You know.
Yep. Good deal. A lot of the units, and I want to talk a little bit about dispatch selection, because I noticed in 2024, you've done at least 22 units that were 38 feet or longer. So you're talking park models, destination models, the monster fifth wheels. That's kind of your bailiwick. And you found a way to be successful in that. Not only are you making money, but you're being safe while you're doing it. Tell us a little bit about your being not bashful about taking those larger units, and what that does to your fuel mileage, truck maintenance, so on and so forth.
Okay. First of all, fifth wheels, I like pulling fifth wheels. And for people who don't know, fifth wheels are a lot easier, in my opinion, to pull. For one, the weight is over your axle and not behind your axle. And if people don't know what, you have more traction, especially in the winter months, and they pull easier. The travel trailers, they can be a challenge also, because your weight is behind your axle, which is back at your bumper, of course. And so you take, for example, a 38-foot fifth wheel, and the length of the truck, because part of the camper is actually over top of the truck. So in reality, it's probably 34 foot. Well, a travel trailer is actually that length, because so you're actually longer, because with the same size of trailer, you're actually longer because you're behind it.
Right.
You're behind the truck instead of over the axle. So that makes a difference. Weight distribution and the way it is with travel trailers, and you got to watch tail swing. I can't stress enough tail swing. And if people aren't familiar with what tail swing is, when you turn a corner, depending on how sharp you turn, the back of that trailer swings out quite a ways, and it's on the blind side of where you can't see. Even if it's the driver's side, it's still blind side. You can't see it because you're turning left, right. You still can't see what it's doing. And that swings out, and it can catch vehicles, that you can hit signs, so you have to watch your tail swing. And I think with travel trailers, it seems like it's a little more, obvious maybe, because if you look at where the axles are, is according to where the weight distribution is on the trailers. They can be toward the middle of the trailer or toward, you know, you look at how long it is from the back of the back tire to the back bumper. So, and as far as why I choose that is, and I like going west, is because I like to drive for 700 miles without having stoplights and things like that, and not tolls and things. And like I said, I grew up in the west. I'm in my element. You know, I like to drive out there. I'd rather deal with wildlife than people. Wildlife, or if I hit one, there's not near as much paperwork, for one. So I don't mind driving in deer areas. I like the outdoors. So I'm a night owl. I like most of my units. I pick up anywhere between midnight and 4 o'clock in the morning. Mainly the primary reason is going through Gary, Indiana on Interstate 80 can be challenging, very challenging.
Sure.
And I like to get through there. And like I said, you can't avoid all the hazardous situations, but if you can minimize some of them, that helps a lot. And that would go back. And I don't know if I answered all your questions, but as far as going out west and having a bigger unit, the other reason why the bigger units is because some people don't like to take the bigger units. So I've got the experience pulling a semi. I don't mind taking them because somebody has to do it. And if I can make the load easier for the dispatchers in the company and at the same time take the pressure off these novice drivers that don't like them. Mm-hmm. You know, so that, and that's the other reason why I don't mind the bigger ones. Now, as far as the wear and tear on the trucks, yes, my truck is, it's got 460,000 miles on it, maintained. You have to drive smarter. Using the tow haul mode is crucial. Using the engine brake, exhaust brake is very, very important. Except for when you're on ice, let me stress that, because it makes a difference. You can break loose using it if you don't know what you're doing. So yeah, I like taking the bigger units. I feel comfortable with them. I think that comes from my trucking background.
What kind of fuel mileage do you get with the larger units?
Okay, with a larger unit, I'm going to use the mid-sized larger unit, because the larger unit is, you know, with my weight staying under the 26,000. The large ones are, you know, you're talking 16,000 pounds, because 10,000 pound truck and at 16,000 pounds puts me at my max. So I'm going to go with the 13,000 pound unit. I'm looking at, if it's a fifth wheel, I'm getting probably, I get about 11 when I'm pulling, that's a pretty good day. That's a pretty good day though. That's not a lot of wind, you know, so let's say average 10. Now, with the travel trailer, with the same size of travel trailer, I'm probably getting maybe a little bit less, even though, because that's a pretty big travel trailer, 13,000. That's mm-hmm. a big travel trailer. Yeah. So it seems like you have, your weight distribution is a little bit different. So most of your travel trailers are under that. Now, of course, if you get a cottage unit or a villa, that they call them, park models,
yep.
It's like pulling a sail. You're getting 7 and 8, you know. And as far as a truck goes, the truck can handle it, but you have to drive accordingly, because not only for fuel consumption, but it's just work, wear and tear on your transmission, your tires, your engine. You have, you know, of course, the more torque you're putting down to the ground, the more tires are going to wear. People, you know.
You've got almost 500,000 miles on your truck, so you've obviously figured some things out to make sure that you're taking care of that truck. In situations like that, what have you found works best, specifically for when you're hauling heavier units or longer units? What are you doing differently while you're driving with those big models that you don't necessarily need to do when you're hauling a 30-foot travel trailer?
Right. Well, one of the biggest things is you have to pay attention to your closing distance when you're driving. And if people don't know what that is, if you're going down the interstate and you're gaining on somebody and there's somebody coming up in the left lane, you need to know, how fast am I gaining on that vehicle in front of me versus how fast that vehicle is passing me. So you got to brake accordingly, especially with big units. And if I have mine on full exhaust brake, as soon as you let off, you know, of course I'm not using cruise at that time. You let off and it starts slowing you down. And so closing distances or closing speed is critical, because you want to know, how fast am I gaining on this? How fast are they gaining on me? Do I have time to make a safe lane change? Do I need to start slowing down and braking? All these things go through your head in milliseconds. You're thinking of, and there again, back to the Smith system, you're always checking your mirrors to find out avenues of approach, avenues of escape, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. So you're always planet. And there are going to be times where I've had to do panic stop. Well, now, if people don't know what a panic stop is I'm cruising along, and let's say I'm looking in my left mirror, and at that very second, that truck in front of me stabbed the brake. So I have to do a panic stop. So I got to stop quick, you know, and there again, you got to have your exhaust brake on, have it ready, not having your cruise on. You know, you're talking a half a second. You're going to go quite a ways with a 16,000 pound unit pushing you.
Sure.
So
and those hard brakes are really tough on your truck, on your fuel mileage, and they're not necessarily. It'll save your life if you don't do it, but to make that a regular occurrence is not gonna make for a long driving career.
Well, and the other thing is, and this is probably something that people don't touch on, the stress factor. If you have one of them incidents happen and you let it bother you, you're not going to want to take another unit like that because you had a bad experience. So if keep the stress down. Keep the stress down. You know what? Take a breather. You know, next rest area, pull in. You know,
sure.
Take a breath. you know, relax a little bit. You know, you might have had it might have been a near miss. Don't let it discourage you, because the next time you're going to be panicky, and that's just bad or worse.
Sure.
So you want to calm your jets, relax, say, you know what you know, was I following too close? Maybe I wouldn't have had to hit the brake so hard if I was. Maybe I'm a little bit too close for under. I don't know my vehicle. I don't know the weight of this trailer. You know, one of the things I do in the yard before I leave with all the trailers, every one of them, when I put it in gear and I pull ahead, I put it in neutral and I slide my brake lock to see if my trailer brakes are slowing me down.
That's good.
You know, so when I pull ahead, I'm rolling 5 mile an hour. I put it in neutral and the truck's still moving. I slide my brake boost and see if it slows me down and stops me. I know my trailer brakes are working.
And that is exactly what the DOT inspector is going to look at during a roadside inspection. Or if you get pulled back at a scale house, that's exactly how they test those trailer brakes. And they will put you out of service if those trailer brakes aren't stopping the truck in the way that you just described.
Well, and it's funny you should mention that, because I had an inspection, and it was in Oklahoma, El Reno, which is just on the other side of Oklahoma City on Interstate 44. He actually did it, and I also had the same thing in South Dakota, right there as you're going in on 20 and South 29 there. And it would not, when you put it in gear, and it will not hold the truck. And they didn't jink me for it, because the trucks have so much torque that they will pull that trailer through the brakes if you put it in gear. Now, in neutral, if you put it in gear and don't even touch the throttle, just let it idle, it would start pulling that trailer because it's pulling through the brakes. And they still pass you because they don't expect them trailers to hold that, because that truck has got so much power, so much torque that it pulls through the brake. But once you put it in neutral and do that, then it stops you. So it is helping a lot to stop the trailer.
Good.
And just FYI, my truck is a 2019 Ram. I got the original brakes on that, 460,000 original brakes.
Holy cow.
And my mechanic in Omaha, I do my business in Omaha and Bellevue, Nebraska, and they're so impressed that I got the original brakes and stuff on that truck.
Well, that brings us up to staying DOT compliant, because it sounds like a lot of your truck maintenance leads to clean DOT inspections. You've had, in the last 5 years, with Wave, you've had 3 DOT inspections, all of them clean. Tell us a little bit about what you do to prepare for a roadside or an inspection behind the scale house, and what role or what function does the truck maintenance play in keeping DOT compliant?
Well, as far as being, I do my own maintenance. When it comes to, I shouldn't say all my maintenance. I do my oil changes and my air filter. I do all that. I have a brother that has got a body shop in Bellevue, and I get to park my truck there and drive home with my car, and it saves some miles. So anyway,
How often do you do your oil changes?
Every 15,000 is what the truck recommends. You know, when I bought the truck, is every 15,000, and I use synthetic oil, and so and depending on. I don't do it every 15,000, because a lot of times I'm doing it at 10. So now that my truck's got more miles on it, I when I check my oil, I smell my oil and I feel my oil to feel what it's like, and then I make a judgment call. But I do, and my tires I get done in Omaha. You know, I have Midwest Tires in Omaha, and then there's a truck shop that does my DOT inspections, and I trust them, as far as keeping my maintenance on my truck, it's important, you know, just checking it over and making sure that everything is right. Your tire pressure, which is nice, because I have the one inside that tells me what my tire pressures are.
Okay.
You know, so it's important to, you know, tire pressure is pretty critical, not only for longevity of the tires, but also for grip and safety on the road.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, of course, there's a lot of different tire manufacturers and people like to prefer different tires, you know. And I've been using the Nexums, which is what they come out with, you know, what was on the Ram, and I've been getting roughly 80,000 out of a set of tires.
That's great.
You know,
that's great. So with also in the same vein of the DOT inspections, logging, speed and truck maintenance issues, those are three of the top categories that we find drivers struggling with at times. What do you tell drivers as far as logs and specifically logs and speed? What advice do you have for your fellow drivers as far as making sure you're staying clean on the road?
Well, mainly I say, and typically speeding is it's not really necessary, especially with a loaded load behind you. No, I'm not saying that I don't, I might go 2 mile an hour over or something. Now, when it comes to a construction zone, I go the other way. I normally drive a speed or two under it, unless it's 45, I might drive that. But you got a 65 mile an hour zone and you got workers active, I'm going slower than the speed limit, because you got a load behind you. Your stopping distance is increased dramatically. Your maneuverability, if you have to swerve. So, if there's active people in the construction zone, I go slower. And as far as the new drivers, you got some new drivers out there, situational awareness, like you said a little while ago, it's critical. And speed takes away from that, and closing distance, like I was talking about. So is it important to drive that much faster to get through that area? No. What are you going to,
Cost you more money to do it that way.
Speeding to me is I don't see how going that fast is going to gain you that much compared to the risks.
Sure.
So, and as far as, what was the other question? I think you said something about
logs.
Yeah, as far as the logging goes, you need to take care of it. You need to do it accurately. And, I think, when the logs go, knowing how to do it is pretty important. No, I've had the mistake where, and this is a thing that with the logs where I drive, I'm cutting it right at 11 hours. Mm-hmm. Okay. I actually went over 11 hours. I was stopped, but I was at my max. So I didn't grab my thing and change my duty status. So I went in and went to the bathroom because I had to go bad. Well, I come back out and I'm red lighted because I didn't change my status immediately. Sure. Because right at that 11 hours, you don't have a minute or two grace period. You're already in violation. Mm-hmm. So even though I wasn't driving, I was still in violation because I didn't change my status. I went and went to the bathroom, come back out. Oh crap! I'm done. But I had to change my duty status. So I was in violation for 2 minutes because I wasn't actually in the truck. So that's one of the things where you have to pay attention and taking your 8-hour break. And this works for me. And just for an example, I like to take my break at 5.5 hours because I'm halfway through my 8-hour day, my 8-hour period. And I stop and I might do a flag stop at 3 hours, and then I do my safety check with my flag stop, and then I do a 1/2 hour break at my 5.5 hour. Now people can do it however they want to, but just keep in mind if you take that break before 3 hours of your driving, you're going to take another one before your 11 hours.
That's right.
So people can do it different ways. They can do it how they want to, but I just do it that way because it works for me. And going across on Interstate 80, I pretty much know the route. I know where I stop. I know where my 1/2 hour break is going to be. So I know where I'm going. It just feels comfortable. And
sure. And
going back to what I said before, if you get familiar with a route or something like that, it takes stress off of you.
Sure.
It takes one more element out of the equation that, okay, I know where my next stop is going to be, so I don't need to think about that. I know where it's at. I know how many miles it is. I know how much fuel I have to get there. I know what to, I've been looking at my app. I know that's my discount fuel price, So let me kill 2 birds with 1 stone. Let me take a break and put some fuel in at the same time,
There you go.
Things like that,
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to start wrapping up here, but I've got a couple more questions for you. One, do you stay in a truck? Or do you stay at a hotel?
Both. Primarily, I sleep in the truck. I am not a very tall person, so I can sleep on the back seat without having a kink in my neck.
Okay.
And I normally I haven't taken my back seat out. A lot of people do. I haven't. I put a sleeping bag on my back seat so I don't get poked in the rib by seatbelts. And I usually sleep in my truck. Now, last night, for example, if I'm doing a 34 or something like that, or I want a good night's rest, and the temperatures, if you're not going to run the air conditioning or something like that, then I stay in a motel.
Sure.
You know, get a shower or whatever. Now, on the road, I take a shower, you know, for an example, and I go to a lot of my stops are Flying J or Pilots. You get free showers. And I use those showers as, you know, as a perk of getting fuel, and I use that as taking a shower. So
sure.
It works out that way. But most of the time, I stay in my truck.
Okay. And obviously, when you're not spending money on a hotel, you're saving money.
So. Yep. Now, there are times, and just prime example, you know, it's actually better to stay in a motel. If you got to let your truck run all night, for one, it's not good for them to idle, but most of them have the high idle, and it's easier on the truck. But you're going through 15, 20 gallons of fuel. Add the price of that up toward a motel room.
Yep.
And they're comfortable to staying in your truck or letting it rattle all night, you know. So depending on what a person wants to do, and you might get a better sleep in a motel than you do in your truck. So if you're in bad weather, you sleep in your truck and let it run all night, and then you get up the next morning and you're not refreshed, you got to start all over and driving that. So getting a motel room might be better in that situation, because you get a better sleep, because you got, oh, I got to drive on ice all again today.
Sure.
And without good sleep and without good rest, that's another a stressful factor for you.
Yep.
So.
And especially around here, you can find discounts for transport drivers, and we've got discounts through Red Roof Inn, the Countryside Inn, not far from here, things like that, places like that that do offer some discounts to drivers. So that's helpful as well.
And there are places that not everybody's military, but they have military, they have AAA, you know, and so there are places out there that have discounts. Don't be afraid to ask for them. They offer them for a reason. So don't be afraid to ask for military discount, AAA discount, CDL discount. A lot of places have CDL discounts, you know, commercial driver, you know. So, you know, they offer them for, you know, to use it, utilize it, you know, find yourself a nice place to stay. And you know, I tell you, I went to sleep, and I'm a warm-blooded kind of person where I don't mind. I like to sleep in the cold. If it's 45 degrees, beautiful sleeping weather for me.
Sure.
You know, sinuses and things. Well, Montana, go to sleep in my back seat. 45 degrees to go to sleep with nothing but a sheet on me, because I use a bed sheet. This is what I cover up with. I woke up and it was 28. So I was a little bit hypothermic, because I was shivering and shaking and like in the truck, you know. And it was a little bit cold, but I slept good. But I turned the heated seat on, and it took a little while to get out and walk around, do my, you know, walk around, wake up a little bit. But yeah, it took a little while to warm up, but I slept good. But it took me a little while to get moving again.
Sure. You are a hunter, and deer season is upon us.
Yeah. I don't want to offend anybody, but years ago, I've always called it hunting. Well, recently, in the last 5 years, I've been using the word harvesting, because apparently hunting offends people, and because you're out there killing an animal and you're putting food on the table, and I don't mean to pick on anybody, but if you don't manage or harvest those wildlife, deer, for example, they are going to die a worse death from overrunning their habitat than they are if you harvest them and get something out of them. So, and if people don't understand that, you got just X amount of land can support, you know, 40 head of deer. Well, if you don't manage that population, and next thing you have double that, well, guess what? They're starving a worse death. So utilize it. So I like to use the word harvest. So we're going to harvest the deer instead of hunt the deer.
Sure.
So, and this weekend, my wife, she's got her tags, and I don't go hunting until Thanksgiving weekend, because we got different counties in South Dakota. And so, yeah, I'm looking forward to be home on Friday, take a load today, and be home on Friday, and I got to get her gun ready. And she can do it all herself, but it's easier for her to have me do it.
Sure.
You know, she joked around and right out to theater. She says, yeah, I don't even have to get out of my jammies. I'm just going to shoot the deer, and then I'm going to tell you to go take care of it for me. And I don't mind. I like helping her. We like to have fun with it. And for that, one of my Christmas presents, I have three children and eight grandkids, but my children, my gift to them for Christmas, my main primary gift is a processed deer. Wow. So I shoot the deer, I take it to the locker, and it's not cheap. Deer meat's not cheap, but it's fun, what we like to do. And they call the locker and tell them what they want, and then about March, when their freezer is empty, they get more meat.
Okay.
So that's
a great gift.
I guess you might call that a redneck gift. You
know? But I don't know about that.
My children, they all thank me for it, and they like it. And they said that's good. They said our freezer's running low about March, and that's about the time the processing gets done, and they get their meat, and so they enjoy it. And I enjoy going out there and teaching people what I know about the hunting Yeah, and enjoy it. You know, the grandkids they're not old enough to go out there and do that yet, but they're getting there. My oldest one is 8, and the youngest ones are 3, so they're not old enough.
Sure, but so, Grandpa will be able to show them how to do things when they're old enough, though.
Yeah, I already started them with BB guns. We already started teaching them gun safety. You can't preach enough about gun safety, and we started out with just little bitty BB guns. You know, you. Muzzle awareness, trigger, all that safety. Yep. So they've already started, but the biggest thing is you don't want to force them and you don't want to go too fast. Take it nice and easy and let them, they got to want to.
Sure.
If you make a child do something that they don't want to do, then it's not good either. So.
Yeah. Well, Rick, I appreciate your time today. This has been great talking with you. Good to catch up a little bit. And thank you all for listening to this episode of the Wave Express Podcast. I hope it's been helpful and insightful. I hope you've gotten a little bit from Rick's experience and some of the things that he does to maintain a successful driving career here at Wave Express. Have a great day and a safe trip.